People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon, welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, there's a new book that's just been published called This Is How It Is, True Stories from South Africa by the Life Writing Collective. It's described as a powerful collection of life stories written in a healing space. And the Life Writing Collective, and incidentally, writing is spelled R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, is facilitated by Dawn Garish and runs courses for anyone who wants to learn to write about their experiences. The approach promotes self-discovery, self-recovery, and more effective communication. They raise funds to make courses available to those in need of sponsorship and to provide platforms for these life stories to be published, hence this book. And Dawn Garish is with me in the studio. Dawn has had 6 novels, a collection of poetry, Difficult Gifts, and a memoir, popular science work, Eloquent Body, published. Both short stories and poetry have been published in anthologies, journals, and magazines. And she's had a short play and short film produced and has written for television and newspapers. And 3 of her novels have been published in the UK. Dawn is a practicing medical doctor and lives in Cape Town. Dawn, welcome. Welcome to Fine Music Radio.
Thank you so much, Rodney.
It's great to have you here. And what an extraordinary project, the writing. I like the way it's a play on words, isn't it? The
of
writing
course.
Collective.
Yes, we have shot ourselves in the foot because people go and look for us on the internet, spelling it W-R-I-T-I-N-G. And unfortunately, that domain has been taken. So please, if you go and have a look at our website, but it's spelled Life Writing, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G.
Now, obviously, you've quoted that because, as I said there, it helps people for self-recovery, effective. So writing means both writing and making yourself write.
Yes. So, you know, the aim of the course is, you know, some writing course is all about being published. That's not what our focus is. Our focus is how do we reflect on ourselves? How do we become more observant? How do we overcome that inner critic that says we're not good enough? And how do we communicate better with other people? How do we listen better to each other people? So it's not just about the individual. It's also about our society. Because when you start listening to other people's stories, you have to recalibrate. You have to reconsider what you've always thought about other people. You know, we've got these terrible prejudices in our culture, in this very fractured society that we've had, you know, well, it's all over the world, but, you know, apartheid really did a lot of damage in that regard. And now we've got this opportunity to speak to people that we normally wouldn't come across in life.
Let me just get this right then, Dawn, straight away. This is not a writing course to write the novel that's in everybody. This is a writing course.
Well, it might be.
Oh, in the future. Yeah. But it is to help communicate and understand each other.
So, you know, I once met a publisher who said people who write primarily for themselves are better writers. If you're writing with one eye on the cash register and the other eye on the reading public, you're not going to do your best work because you're already – you're not paying attention to what needs to be written. Mm-hmm. So that's the place to start. Write for yourself, and then you get into the download, the creative space. And then things get very interesting and curious-making, even though you're writing about your own life. But, of course, you can take the things that obsess you and intrigue you and turn it into a fictional project. But the place to start is with your own life and what gets to you.
Is this book, the life writing one, This Is How It Is, True Stories from South Africa, is this the first publication of
it's our first anthology
project.
You know, I've been teaching life writing for 9 years, but we only started the NPA, non-profit organization, 18 months ago. We started trying to register. We only got registered in March this year. But in the meantime, we've been running more courses for sponsored people and also raising funds to bring out the anthology, start a website. So it's become a much bigger project than when I was just running it by myself.
How did you manage to get all these people to write for you? Where do they come from? I'm excited to see how many there are.
Yes. There are 52 people.
There you go.
Poems and prose in the book. They're all derived from people's experience. They speak to very many different topics in very many different ways. So there's their tragic stories and their hilarious stories. But how they came to us, it's largely word of mouth. But, you know, every now and then we'll get an organization asking us to assist them. But, you know, we're available. And, you know, people who come on the courses and benefit from it and begin to value their own creative urges. And, you know, you see this big light going on in people, and it's just such a wonderful thing. and people come out, it opens your heart, you know. It has opened my heart, this work. And people who attend the courses, you just see their hearts opening towards each other. And then they tell people about it, and, you know, one thing leads to another.
Okay. So then how long has it been going, the Writing Collective?
Well, we applied for registration as a non-profit 18 months ago, and we got registered in March. But I've been teaching for about 9 years.
Oh, you said so.
Yeah.
But not, it wasn't called the Writing Collective then, was it?
No.
It was something different. So then it came together in this organization that you have now.
Yeah. I just was complaining to somebody who had been on several courses and came to the follow-up, because we have follow-ups afterwards. You know, you need to keep that fire burning and have that community of writing is also really important to develop your skills and develop your insight. So I was complaining to one of the people who come regularly that I was frustrated because I knew these stories, brilliant stories that were coming out of the courses, would never get published. And also I wanted to raise funds to bring, you know, have more sponsored people. And she said, okay, let's do it. So it's her fault that we started. But there's one, you know, you can think, I think I'll have a baby. And then you have the baby. So very different projects, thinking about it and actually having a baby.
Yes,
been a lot of work, a lot of volunteer work, even though we raised seed funding. And this has been the magnificent results. We're getting fantastic feedback.
And you said that it's selling very well, which is very good news for
you. Very good news. You know, we're heading towards a reprint. And and the book itself raises funds for people to come on the courses who otherwise would not be able to come.
I want to talk a bit more about the courses in a moment, how long they are and that sort of thing. But I think it's time for your first piece of music while we ponder what you've just been saying. What have you chosen, Dawn?
Okay, so my first two pieces is music composed and recorded by my sons.
Oh, there you go.
Yep, and the reason why I brought it is a little bit edgy, you know, mummy brings her son's music. However, I decided to plow on because, first of all, I do think they're very talented. But secondly, they're incredible examples, and I'm very grateful that they have a place to take the things that disturb them and work it through in music and in lyrics, which is in the end is poetry. So I think it's a gift one can give one's children to encourage them to really have some kind of creative outlet for to explore themselves, to download, to vent their frustrations or, you know, their lost loves.
Yes, of course.
So, the first one is by my oldest son, Luke Lewis. He now has changed his name to Jupiter Lewis. And the piece is called Good Question.
Question.
post a star? Do I have the patience to begin? Underlining everything within. Could I fall in love with a world? Is the weight to your heart so absurd? Should I give in and despair? It's a good question. I'd really like to understand the world. Begin with what you understand yourself. If you cease to hesitate, you'll find the answers to your questions.
Well, that was a piece composed locally called Good Question by the son of my guest on People of Note this week, Dawn Garish. And Dawn, he was his name?
His name now is Jupiter Lewis. He changed his name from Luke Lewis, but it's come out under Luke Lewis.
Okay. And you'd said when we were chatting while we were listening, you said that he's actually quite prolific. He's
very
extremely creative in a sense.
He's created or composed more than 100 songs, and a lot of them are really good. But, you know, it's difficult as a writer, as a musician, to, you know, get anywhere other than for your own pleasure and your immediate families and friends.
So what we're doing is we're talking about a new book, an anthology of true stories from South Africa that's recently been published by the Life Writing Collective called This Is How It Is. One of the comments on the back cover, refreshing, poignant, and wide-ranging, this collection surprises with unusual perspectives and gives voice to a broad array of talents. And Dawn is the person who kind of instituted the Writing Collective. And as we've been saying, writing is not the one with the W, because it also implies healing. So writing is spelled R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. You were talking about courses that you run, so I'm intrigued to know what sort of form they take and how long would a course be?
Well, you know, I have occasionally run a course of 2 hours long, you know, for Open Book Festival, that sort of thing. But ideally, you know, the process is initially around getting over that or combating or standing up to that inner voice that says you can't do it. I mean, I'm very aware that people who arrive on the course have already combated that voice to an extent. Mm. But to arrive and then take courage, takes time, and then to get into that download space and trust it. Trust that the creative part of the brain or the unconscious or the muse or whatever you want to call it actually has a plan that's much bigger than your own tiny idea of what it is you're going to write, and that something is trying to complete itself. So my job, part of my job, is to help people get out of their own way and get out of needing to know what's going to happen next. Because by definition, creativity is not knowing what's going to happen next. So, and people have to learn to trust that. And the advantage, one of the many advantages of learning or engaging in regular creative practice in your own life, is to become more comfortable with not knowing what's going to happen next. Because, you know, we think we know where we're going, and it's good to have goals, yes. But life isn't like that. You know, we get knocked off our pedestal of knowing what we know. And then what do you do with that feeling of, you know, this is out of control, and I don't know who I am and where I'm going? and you can take it to the page, you can take it to the clay, you can take it to the dance floor, to music, and explore it there. Control your own anxiety or explore your own fears through that, and it makes you feel better.
But as part of being a practicing medical doctor, were you involved in psychology? Does this come from? Because it can't be easy to get a complete stranger in and get them to loosen up and let it out.
Yes.
There's got to be almost, I presume, a therapeutic process.
I don't like to use the word therapy because it implies there's a professional and a couch.
Okay.
I like to think of things as being harmful or helpful. So there's this psychiatrist, Louis Cozzolino, who talks about opening up the gap between perception and reaction. And he says change is possible. You know, we've all put something in place to help us feel better in the short term, but unfortunately we often trade short-term relief for long-term disaster. So, you know, to first of all interrogate or examine the things that you've put in place to make you feel better and whether they are helpful or harmful. You know, smoking, drinking, running a marathon every day when your knees are crumbling, shopping when you don't need the things that you're buying. You know, these things make us feel better short term, but long term are a problem. So, first of all, recognizing that, okay, here it comes again. I'm feeling anxious and this is my normal reaction. And I'm going to now withhold my normal reaction because actually it's not serving me and it's not serving the world. That's the other thing. If you buy things you don't need, it's, you know, not good for the planet. So, and then what are you going to do with the consequent increase in anxiety? Because you're going to feel worse rather than better in the interim. And there, that's the place where the arts come in. So the arts are not a hobby. They're not a pastime. They are a way to engage with your own, what you don't know about yourself, and then get it out into the world, get this feeling of anxiety out of your body and onto the page or into the music, and then it starts having a conversation with you, and then you start getting curious rather than fearful and hopeful, and then you start learning something about yourself, and in the end you feel better. So I think this is a great reason why medical humanities has taken off in the world. You know, this whole field where the social sciences and the arts are starting to have a conversation with the health sciences around what are we going to do about our well-being. You know, facts have been extraordinarily unhelpful in the world. I mean, if we look around us, I mean, I'm not putting everything down, obviously. You know,
No,
of course not. So medical science has brought huge advances, but it's left out very important parts of the story and has sidelined the creative arts as avenue or a door into our own well-being. So I'm always starting to bring that back in a very significant way, but I haven't answered that question that you asked me about how long the courses are. The structure I like is over five mornings, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, because then the group grows to trust each other. Trust is a very important thing at the beginning of the course, and I'm very, you know, it's those meta skills and facilitation, very careful to facilitate an atmosphere of trust, because you've got to trust yourself as well. You don't know what's going to arrive on the page. People get anxious. You know, you don't know what your critic's going to say, your inner critic. You don't know what the outer critic's going to say, the people in the course. And people, you know, sometimes share quite vulnerable making things. So although you choose what you're going to share, I don't force anything. I don't believe in forcing anything, obviously. So it takes time for the unconscious to kick in. So you need to sleep and dream and rest and reflect and walk. And then, you know, so over five mornings or else it's over 3 days, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, because not everybody can take a week off work in order to do the course.
And how long is each course day? Is it a day?
Yeah, the morning is from 9 to 1, and the day courses are half past 9 to half past 3 usually.
Okay. Let's have another of your music choices, Dawn. What's your
right, so the second one is also one of my other son, and his name is Jonathan Lewis, and this song is called Summer Rain.
The night. have been a moment kept aside. You could have been a whisper of wind in the air. You could have been a whisper of love in my ear. Been a woman from far away. You could have never told me you never meant to stay. You could have never gone.
Another homegrown piece there called Summer Rain by Jonathan Lewis, who's the son of my guest, Dawn Garish. Dawn is here. We're talking about the Writing Collective, the Life Writing Collective, and their latest anthology, This Is How It Is. And Dawn, you were talking about those courses and the period of time and working with groups, but how do you get someone to actually write the first sentence? Because that's the famous author thing, isn't it? Staring at a blank page. If they are going to be as open, and the thing that struck me, although I haven't read every one of these stories yet, the thing that struck me was the incredible openness and flow. It doesn't sound as though they're having difficulty writing. Which is thanks to you, I dare say.
They're very basic mistakes that beginner writers make. And once you correct those, or once you give insight into why those don't work, the most unbelievable writing comes up. I mean, I often feel very envious of the writing that comes out of the courses. Wish I could write like that. And the mistakes people make is to write out of what they know, what they think. They're telling the reader what they must think. And they are spanning an experience. You know, they're writing from above it in a sense. Mm-hmm. Whereas the taking the reader into the sensory lived experience and not telling them what to think, just showing them like a home movie, except better than a home movie because you've got the sense of smell as well to evoke the scene. So I start people off saying, write scenes and put yourself back in that scene. And I help them with visualization. So, you know, very evocative things, very easy way to get people really inside the story that they're trying to tell is to take them back to their childhood home, for example, and they start remembering things that they'd forgotten. But it's the textures, it's the smell, it's the sounds of the home that really help the reader to, it's like taking the reader with you, you know, holding their hand and taking them into the story rather than beating them over the head with a story.
Like a sort of guide, guiding you through the story.
Yes.
But there's a vast array of subjects as well.
Yeah.
I think you said earlier there's some tragic stories, there's some happy stories. He loved her, returning after the stroke, love and color at the lake, children of the light, altered states. I'm just before the dog, perfect hues of green, the unwritable, which I found quite interesting.
Mm.
How I met Dirk, a mother and son's journey. There are all sorts of subjects, aren't there, which presumably you encourage.
Yes, and also the voice is important. So, you know, it was a really interesting experience editing the pieces because we had, especially if somebody was not a first language English speaker and had chosen to write in English, we had to be very careful with voice, you know, because you can edit a piece into something very tight and bland and dull, actually, and to retain the liveliness of
the character,
yes,
of the writer.
Yes, and particularly people whose first language isn't English, sometimes write in the most creative ways that English speakers can't because they've been trained so strictly in grammar and rules and all that sort of thing. So retaining that was important as well.
Okay, and so these people, for example, who have appeared in this book, This Is How It Is, they've now been published. What happens to them then? You said you like doing follow-up things and all that?
Yes, well, we always invite, the last day we talk about how to keep going. You know, because you go on a fabulous course, you get all inspired, and then you go back to washing the dishes and, you know, biting your nails or whatever it is. And just we spend some time, what are you going to give up to, if this is valuable to you? And I mean, this does need a research project. Why is it we don't do the things that make us happy? Why do we leave that to last? Why don't we make that a priority? And it is actually like reading a book. You know, once you're inside the project, you can't wait to get back to it.
That's a good analogy, actually, talking about reading a book, which we can all relate to, and how easy it is to get into a bit. What I also found here, Dawn, it sounds like I'm reviewing the book, is you drawn in quite quickly at the beginning. There are a few stories that really, you read the first sentence and you're drawn in, which of course is a sign of a sort of genius writer, famous opening lines. But that's what I found browsing through this.
Well, there are very few rules in the course, but I do warn against starting, I was born in 1956 and my mother was a teacher, and, you know, you just head for the action.
Yes.
And then you stay with the energy. And then, you know, there is an editing process within the course where, you know, after the download, you know, I think of it as sewing up your own brain. So there's the download side of the brain, and then there's the editing side of the brain. The editing side of the brain, unfortunately, usually comes in as the inner critic that stops you and is mean and a bully. But so that part of the course is humanizing that inner voice to become a helpful, encouraging voice that says, maybe that first paragraph isn't working, and you can go straight for the second one because that's where the energy is. And you get help from your colleagues or your co-writers to see what's working and what isn't working. So we fine-tune or hone these terrible voices in us that all of us carry around so that they're not so harmful to us and actually can be helpful to us.
Yes, it's interesting because you spoke about how important the arts were recently, just a while ago. And although we're talking about literature, in a sense, here, writing, you also mentioned music and ballet. I mean, you happen to concentrate on writing, but the same could be said for someone wanting to play an instrument or wanting to learn to dance, wanting to learn to act by letting something out, having it cathartic.
Well, I also ran a course called If Your Chronic Complaint Was a Work of Art, What Would It Be? So you take the thing that disturbs you, and instead of seeing it in a histopathological, biochemical way, or a psychological way, you see it in as a creative door to go through, and take it into clay or movement, collage, drawing, writing.
No wonder the arts, as you say, are so vitally important to our very being. A third piece of music, Dawn.
I've brought a piece by Zap Mama. It's Mari Dorne, I think I'm saying her name correctly, who's singing a song called For No One, which speaks to Women's Month, to gender-based violence. There's been a march recently, and that's... City life steals your rights, robs you of your dignity, robs you of your sanity. City life, lose your soul. Infinity, till you wander aimlessly with a one-track mind. For no one will I go to hell. For no one will I go to hell? For no one. Take me away from this madness. Take me away from this sadness. Don't want to be part of your confusion. Don't want to be part of your corruption. And be fooled by illusion. For no one will I go to hell. Oh, for no one will I go to hell. For no one note your sermon goes the roots without the roots, makes hollow sounds to my ear. You've got cars to drive and ships to sail and planes to fly and material possessions, but I've got mountains to climb. For no one I am going to hell. For no one. For no one. For
Will I go to hell? For no one. Will I go to hell?
Well, the group Zap Mama, am I right about that?
Yes.
Not to hear that every day on fine no. radio.
The, what I like about them, if I can just say, speaking to this theme, in their music, they're trying to bridge different cultures, the African culture with European culture. And I love that when there's some kind of fusion where there's different people trying to talk to each other, which is what we're trying to do in This Is How It Is.
Okay. So my guest is Dawn Garish, who is the facilitator of the Life Writing Collective. As I keep saying, writing is not spelt with a W, although you think it would be, but writing as a result of self-recovery. And the book, This Is How It Is, True Stories from South Africa, a whole compendium, an anthology there. Dawn, just moving away from this briefly, is music, we're talking about music and your two sons are musicians, as we heard. Does music play a part in your life? I mean, you clearly have a very busy life because you're a medical doctor. In fact, I love your quote. Can I use your quote here?
Certainly.
You say, I'm slowly changing from a doctor who writes into a writer who doctors. So you also write, in fact, as we discovered, poetry and stories.
Yes, no, music's a huge part of my life. And, you know, if we do have another life, I always wonder, what would I come back as? And, you know, because there's no time to do more than what one does, even though, you know, I live in this interdisciplinary zone where I wish I was a painter and a writer and a, you know, an artist and a dancer and musician. And I love a huge range of music. So you gave me a terrible task. I'm not sure everybody says that to you on this program.
Choosing music.
Yes.
But then, Dawn, how come you ended up as a medical doctor, may I ask?
I was born to be a writer. I was born with the urge to read and write. And then my family decided that I would become a doctor because it's a real job. And it's I was very lucky to have a father who was one of his big feminist acts to make sure that his children were well educated. And it had status and it had, you know, it was a real job helping people. But there was always something missing because the person was left out of the consultation. Now, we've got a very elegant way of approaching a diagnosis, but it's a closed box. You know, it doesn't really bring in, we don't even visit people in their homes anymore. Not many GPs don't do that. So you don't get to know the person intimately and how their relationship with their grandmother and their dog just dying influences how they're feeling at the moment and how that influences their illness, you know. So, but this is a way of people learning to manage their anxiety better. And through managing your anxiety and depression, it can help you feel better. And that's got to be good for your health, feeling better.
Words from a doctor. What aspect of medicine are you in?
I'm a GP.
Are you a GP?
I'm a locum.
And are you still practicing?
Yes, but
do you have time?
I work about 15 to 20 hour a week. And the rest of the time I do work for the LRC. And I run courses and I do my own writing. I've got the first 2 weeks of August crossed out of my diary because I'm going to be writing.
Okay. And do you ever get a chance to visit a patient? I know, as you said, I mean, remember the days when I remember being at school and my mother phoning the doctor and he would come around and do his rounds and come into the bedroom and, as you said, pick up vibes, for want of a better description, from the family, from the patient.
That's right.
And that's not happening.
You know, I tend to be a triage doctor, i.e. you come with your heart attack or your cut finger, I'm good at that, or you're vomiting, and I sort you out or, and either refer you or help you and off you go. The chronic conditions, which I think are we have to address in other ways because it's not working. You know, the chronic conditions are, it's an epidemic of hypertension, diabetes, obesity. We have to find other ways of managing it. And a lot of these chronic conditions, not all of them, but a lot of them are lifestyle issues. And this is why I feel as a doctor, I'm actually doing more by teaching people to self-reflect and revisit the images. I mean, this is neuroscience, that our behavior is driven by images and narrative. So if you can revisit or access the image that's driving the behavior, then and interact with it using an artistic medium, not logic, because logic is, facts are incredibly unhelpful a lot of the time. So
interesting to hear you say this.
If you can access them and work with them in artistic medium, the idea is that the image, the stuck image starts to shift and then the behavior starts to shift. For example, I've got friends who smoke and I have this fantasy, and it might not be the right one, but you know, they might have actually a whole other story. But my fantasy is that they're rebelling. They're saying, nobody's going to tell me what to do. So if you can access, and we need rebels in the culture because the culture is in trouble and we are doing things that are not good for us or for the planet. But the rebel tends to be self-destructive rather than outward-looking and taking on things in society. That would be one example where I think accessing that image of the rebel and then taking it into a useful domain could be a result of engaging it through your artistic medium.
Words from a doctor. And no wonder you say I'm slowly changing from a doctor who writes into a writer who doctors.
I don't think I've convinced you with my argument, Rodney.
You have.
Really?
You have.
Oh, good.
Your smoking metaphor was a very, it put it into perspective for me anyway,
okay,
which could apply also to people who drink or who have other sort of substance abuse thing. So, yes, I agree with you, absolutely. Did I look skeptical?
Nonplussed.
Okay. Dawn, let's have another piece of music.
Thank you. So this is Nicholas Lenz, and he's got, as far as I know, two CDs out in a trilogy. This one's called Terra Terra. The first one's Flamma Flamma. What I like about a young composer who's he's writing with mythological music, and he's taken naive Bulgarian folk singers and mixed them up with serious opera singers and come up with the most extraordinary music, to my mind. And this piece is from Terra Terra, and it's called Molitur Memoria.
Steht in der Funkart mit Mut.
That was Nicholas Lenz and a piece called Molitur Memoria, something like, how was my pronunciation, Dawn?
You obviously didn't do Latin.
No, I didn't. Dawn Garish is my guest, and we're talking about Life Writing Collective and a new book that's just been published, an anthology called This Is How It Is, a powerful collection of life stories written in a healing space by people who are not necessarily authors. But you, Dawn, as we've just been discussing, are a medical doctor with a fascination in clearly things psychological as well. But there's a quote that you have got here that I quite like. You said, "I am fascinated by the body as a metaphor, as dream, as map of the unconscious." Now, what does that actually mean? Without it sounding airy-fairy.
I'm always skating that thin ice, and I'm always worried I'll get struck off the roll for saying something that offends the medical establishment.
Yes, you have to be careful.
So, you know, the analogy I make is that if you're having central chest pain that is crushing, you're breaking into a sweat, you want to vomit, you're short of breath, it's going down your arm, don't sit down and write a poem. Go to your emergency unit and go and get your heart attack sorted out. But if you come home and you don't write the poem, you're missing half the information. Because I think that the body speaks in symptoms like dreams speak in symbols. Also, the body is a repository of memory in that we remember things that have emotional charge, and emotions are a physiological event. They happen in the body. You know, you sweat, or you get a bit of short of breath, or you get goose flesh. So going back into the memory of you know what you're going to write, suddenly these things start happening in the body, which helps you remember more. Or you can start with a feeling in the body and get to the memory or the story or the image that's driving your life. So you can start in either place. But the body informs what we are trying to write or express And so I see it as a massive, huge resource. You know, we tend to drive around in our minds as though our body is just a vehicle for getting around in. But actually, our body is like information that's just saying, listen to me. You know, D.H. Lawrence in his poem says, there are three strange angels knocking at your door. Admit them, admit them. You think they're going to do you harm because the body is both this beautiful resource and this terrible trouble. It gives us lots of trouble. And the theory would be the body is disturbing you so that you pay attention to something.
Yes.
And what that thing is, we only half understand until we engage with it in a symbolic way or a metaphoric way.
And this is a lot of what you teach on these courses, to tell people, look, this is what you must do.
Yeah.
Listen to your body. And I remember, this is a rather odd thing to bring up, but I remember I was in a monastery once, and the mother of the convent, we were talking about religious things, and she said, listen to your body. And that had to do with a faith-based thing.
Yes.
You know, listen to what your body is saying. If you're going in the right direction work-wise, there was a time when I thought I had a vocation, for example.
Yes.
And I will never forget her saying, listen to your body. So what you're saying is the same thing. Listen to your body.
Well, the trouble is the mind is so powerful. Our thinking can override that intuition. And we're taught not to trust our intuition. And of course, our intuition can be wrong sometimes. Mm. But if you make your intuition strong, it's like a muscle. You listen, you try things out. It's a guide. You know, it's like cairns going up the mountain. It will show you which way. You know, that feeling of yes, feeling no, that actually has important information.
What sort of age, I meant to ask you, are these people who come in the courses?
All ages.
Be as young as teenagers or old.
Yeah, I generally encourage people post-school, although sometimes do teach in schools, but you've got to have, well, I mean, young people do have a lot of life experience already, some people. It's a tool for anybody, but, you know, people get into quite difficult material sometimes, so I think you need a bit of ego strength to, you know.
And what about sponsorship? How do you publish all these things? Do you have people sponsoring you?
Well, we got seed funding from mainly two private individuals, which got us going. It got a website up and running, which was way more expensive than we realized. You know, we've got to manage the website. There are fantastic stories on the website. Please go and read them as a little taster also for what's in the book. And information about courses on the website, www.lifewriting.com.
You have shot yourself in the foot with that clever title.
So the funding helped us also to bring out the anthology and to sponsor more people to come on more courses. I like to have lots of different people in the same room because we're talking about diversity and being comfortable with the unknown. Mm. Because we tend to say that person looks different, so I can't trust them or whatever it is, you know, or they've had a different experience or believe something different from me and therefore they must be wrong and I must be right.
Or as we know so tragically in this country, a different race, therefore
exactly.
They can't be.
And in the world, you go and bomb someone that you don't agree with, you know. So if you're sitting in the room with people with very different persuasions, very different ideas, very different within their upbringing, and starting to communicate with each other and starting to listen to each other is the most amazing experience. So we try to get a mix of people and cross-subsidize. So people who can come on the can afford to pay and even pay a little bit more are subsidizing people who can't afford the course.
Oh, I see.
But we are looking for funding now because we've run out of the seed funding. We are running on the proceeds of the book itself at the moment, and it's selling well. But at some point, we are applying all over the place. There's also SnapScan in the book if anybody wants to give us a little donation.
Okay. Now, Dawn, our time is more or less up, but it's been really a fascinating conversation and a different sort of conversation here on People of Note. So just let's recap. This Is How It is the name of the book. True Stories from South Africa with the Life Writing Collective. Now, the website, let's just get that right, is www.lifewriting.com. And writing is spelled R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G. Do remember that. And the book is available in good bookshops, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, all over.
Okay, now what's your last piece of music before I let you go?
So I had to include Joni Mitchell because she has been so formative in my life. And I think she also took huge risks in her own creativity. She didn't go down the usual path. She really created a unique sound, a unique voice. I think she invented chords as well in some of her music. She also didn't write about relationships in a sickly sweet sentimental way. She went straight for the jugular, said it like it is. And this piece that I've chosen is called Jericho.
Dawn Garish, thank you very much for, as I said, a fascinating course, and all strength to your arm, and I look forward to your next publication.
Thank you. Thank you, Rodney.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
This December, something extraordinary is coming to Cape Town. Experience the global phenomenon Matilda the Musical, inspired by the magic of Roald Dahl, live on stage at Artscape. The New York Post says, believe the hype. Don't miss the musical of the decade. Proudly brought to you by Peter Turin and GWB Entertainment in association with the Royal Shakespeare Company. Be a genius. Book now.
FMR.